and welcome to Need to Know, your weekly investment podcast brought to you by the experts at Coutts. I'm Sarah Muir, and I'm joined, not as always, by Alan Higgins, because we let him go on holiday this week, but I am joined this week in the offices in 440 Strand by multi-asset portfolio manager Monique Wong. Monique, welcome back to Need to Know. We haven't had you on for a while. Now, each week on the podcast, as regular listeners will know, we look at the three things investors need to know for the week ahead. So, Monique, what do we need to know this week?
Good morning, Sarah. It's good to be here. I know I had a look at my spreadsheet, and I was last summer, so it was quite a while.
Long overdue.
Indeed. So three things for this week. I'm going to pick, first of all, central banks, because we have interest rate announcements this week from the US on Wednesday, Europe on Thursday, and Japan on Friday. So we want to watch what those announcements come out as. Secondly, we do want to do a half-year stock take, as it were. You know, what we thought about at the beginning of the year versus what has transpired. It keeps us honest.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think thirdly, we want to talk about Netflix and Tesla, but within the context of, you know, the Magnificent Seven technology stocks and their performance this year. And we've got, it's earnings season, and we've got earnings coming up this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Very important. Okay, well, we normally always start with a data point, but what we're going to start off with you is, you mentioned central banks. It's about data-driven decisions. So as you say, it's a big week for central banks this week.
Yeah, so I'll start off with the Federal Reserve, the US Federal Reserve and the ECB, the European Central Bank, because I'm going to put them two together because they're both expected to raise interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point this week. And in market parlance, I'm going to say it's already in the price.
Yeah.
The markets are expecting it. In fact, in both cases, I'm going to say that the market is hoping for one and done.
Yeah.
Although in both cases, I'm also going to say that the central bank chiefs are likely to stay with that higher for longer messaging.
You know,
they're going to leave their options open. They're going to leave the door open for more interest rate hikes. And certainly, the ECB, Christine Lagarde, has already said there is going to be another interest rate hike in the offing.
So we expect a rate rise from both central banks, but what's going to be key is going to be what the central bank say after that announcement, isn't it?
Yeah. So we know that, well, we know we've had disinflation, you know, and the disinflation in the regions, both the US and in Europe, increases the likelihood of that one and done.
Yeah.
US inflation, it's been talked about on this podcast, it's fallen from 9% to 3%. So it's within touching distance of their inflation target, European inflation from 10.5% to 5.5%.
Yeah.
Now, disinflation, what we've seen is not largely one that's been engineered by central banks. Okay. You know, the supply bottleneck has shifted to a supply glut because conditions normalized post lockdown, energy prices have come down. And energy prices are not set within the sphere of central banks. So, you know, by and large, we have still to see the impact of the aggressive rate interest rate hikes in inflation. And certainly in the case of the US, where core inflation is falling quite decisively, the market has already started thinking about interest rate cuts, the Fed pivot, as it's called.
Yeah.
The thing is, the labor market's still quite tight.
Yeah, exactly.
Wage growth is still quite healthy. So I'm going to say the focus at these meetings, it's more going to be around the messaging. What is Jerome Powell going to say? What is Christine Lagarde going to say? So the press conference, I think, is going to be where the focus is, not on the actual rate announcement. We know they're going to raise rates.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to be picking up on that point in our next episode of Need to Know, which will touch on what we're going to be covering towards the end of the podcast. Okay, so that's the Fed and the ECB. We kind of know what they're going to do, but we've got the Bank of Japan, who are on a very different glide path at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. They're on a different glide path. They are a completely different kettle of fish. No expectation of interest rate moves here, especially as the Bank of Japan, the new governor, he has said he wants to keep monetary conditions easy. But, and there's always a but.
There's always, it's either that or it's always theory,
So headline inflation in Japan is now at 3.3%.
Yeah.
It's now higher than inflation in the US.
And which is what they've been desperately trying to do. How long have they been trying to get inflation at that sort of level?
20 years.
Okay.
I mean, I'm rounding, but you know, and core inflation, which as we know is when you strip out food and energy, that's at 4.2%. And to give you some perspective, that's the highest level that Japan has experienced since mid-1981. Mid-1981, that's when floppy disks were at its height.
I can just about remember floppy disks. Goodness me, that's quite incredible. So the Bank of Japan must be jumping for joy that they're getting inflation up, are they? Or are they now starting to be concerned?
It's good, because they've been trying to engineer this for a long time. But it is above their target. And it is higher than they've seen in a very, very long time. So, you know, they're intending on keeping interest rate conditions easy, but I'm going to say that the speculation around higher interest rates will persist.
Because at the moment, what are they? Are they still in negative territory at the moment, the Bank of Japan?
Yeah, effectively.
Yeah. Okay. So we don't know whether we'll see a rate rise this week from the Bank of Japan. That's the one that's a little bit unclear.
I don't think we will, because the Bank of Japan governor has guided the market that they're not going to do it at this meeting. Certainly, if they did, I mean, the risks are skewed more negatively, if I'm going to put it that way. But, you know, my message is that the speculation around interest rate rises in Japan is not going to go away.
Okay. All right, then. So to summarize, then, we've got it's as Michael Cahill, an analyst for Goldman Sachs, said, it's a momentous week this week. We've got the Fed and the ECB expected to have another 25 basis point rate hike this week. Are they going to be one and done? That remains to be seen, but it's going to be a lot of focus on what the central bankers are saying after those announcements. And then we've got the one big question mark is the Bank of Japan. They're currently essentially in negative territory at the moment with their interest rates. Will we see a rate rise? It seems to be the guidance is we won't. But it's interesting because their inflation is now starting to go up. And in fact, as you say, their core CPI is actually higher than the US, first time since floppy disks were a thing. All right, then. So that's central banks. Now, half year stock take. We are just into the sort of second half of 2023. Before we focus on perhaps what we got right or what we got wrong, what were we sort of thinking at the beginning of the year? What was our expectation of how 2023 was going to play out?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to, you know, frame it. What did we think at the start of the year? Now, our 2023 outlook at the start of the year, it headlined with US recession and falling company earnings. But those negative headlines were mitigated by several things. Three things, because we like three.
Yeah, we love three. We love three on Need to Know.
Firstly, falling inflation, and therefore the aggressive interest rate rises were going to be behind us.
Yeah.
You know, it was just going to be a calibration, the end piece.
Yeah.
Secondly, because of the double-digit declines that we saw in both bonds and equities in 2022, a painful year for everybody, market valuations were attractive.
Yeah.
So it was, we thought, going to be a constructive year for balanced mandates. And that's what we call it in the UK. In the US, it's called 60-40 portfolio, 60% equities, 40% bonds.
Yeah.
Thirdly, recession, we thought, was going to present us with a window of opportunities.
Yeah.
A window of opportunity to buy assets at more attractive levels.
Yeah.
And in our 2023 outlook, we highlighted emerging markets and smaller companies.
Yeah.
So, you know, in total, that's kind of what we thought. Were we right?
Well, that was going to be my question. What? And there were one or two sort of curveballs that were thrown at us in the first half of this year, weren't there?
Yeah. So on the were we right, the answer is going to be yes and no. In fact, every year that we take a stock take at the mid-year point is likely always going to be yes and no, because it's just super difficult to be prescriptive about both the economy and the markets in very short timeframes. And 6 months is a very short timeframe.
Mm. Yeah.
So what has transpired?
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think has, let's start with what hasn't worked.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we didn't get, did we, the most, as Alan's talked about on numerous times, we've talked about the recession being, when it happens, is going to be the most anticipated recession in the history of markets.
Yeah, so it's been a very anticipated recession. Our own in-house US recession indicator currently is at 64%, so it's still elevated.
Mm.
Doesn't mean that it won't happen, you know, we think that it'll happen with a delay. The risks are still high. The economy has been more resilient than expected.
Yeah.
And it's actually turned out to be a little bit of a Goldilocks scenario.
Mm.
Housing and manufacturing, which always decline in a recession, they have weakened, but they have stabilized recently. Partly it's because we have this, you know, the US has had their Inflation Reduction Act, they've had the CHIPS Act, both of that has supported moving businesses back to the US, onshoring, you know. That is effectively fiscal stimulus. So it's not the kind of fiscal stimulus we had in COVID where there were money handouts, but it's the kind of fiscal stimulus where there's been jobs.
So is it less inflationary from that point of view than I guess?
Well, it's not that it's less inflationary. It's that fiscal stimulus has offset monetary stimulus. It has offset monetary tightening to some degree. So net net, there hasn't been huge job deterioration. You know, in fact, you've had more jobs created in manufacturing in spite of the fact that the manufacturing sector has weakened. You know, and I'm going to say then people largely have jobs. They're getting paid, and consumers therefore are willing to pay the price tags of companies that are trying to resist lower profits. I mean, just the other day on the desk, one of my colleagues came back to the desk after lunch and he said, I bought a coffee and it was £4. And I was like, what? So people are willing to pay those higher prices and equity markets are up. US markets are now up 20%.
Well, I was going to say, we're really back almost to sort of record levels for the S&P 500, aren't we? We're not that far off.
I know. And the other bit of the Goldilocks is that, you know, US inflation, it has fallen quite decisively, 9 down to 3%. Wage growth is healthy because people have jobs. So although aggressive interest rates are behind us, calibrating that last piece of the interest rate rise, that has been kind of prolonged. So on the back of that, bond, you know, government bond returns have been more pedestrian compared to equities anyway. Although they are within the realm of expectations, because one of the things we did say at the beginning of the year was that investors would earn the 4% government bond yield. And Alan has been on the podcast talking about this. And in effect, you know, that's what they've done. At the half year, bonds were up 2%. So we've effectively clipped that coupon. The prospect for capital gains on bonds, that tends to come when the market smells that interest rate increases are coming to an end. And I dare say that that prospect improves at this juncture. I, you know, I do think that we are still on track for a constructive year for a balanced mandate or for the 60-40.
So at the moment then, they've kind of perhaps reverted back to their more usual kind of behaviour. You've got equities doing well, bonds perhaps doing less well, but you would expect that in a normal 60-40 portfolio.
One thing I didn't mention is that in March we had these bank stress events, but we've all kind of forgotten about it now. The market's certainly drawn a line in the sand around it. But in that period of stress, we did see that bonds performed the portfolio ballast. There is enough yield in the bonds now to perform that portfolio ballast type of function that it used to do. So that gives me some comfort.
Thoughts then, going back to what we originally sort of thought at the beginning of the year, that we sort of saw a US recession happening, and it was very much anticipated, not just by us, but by everyone. But do we now see there's a chance of a so-called soft landing? Could the Fed engineer that and we get no recession and we get, you know, back to sort of 2% inflation?
It's not impossible for the Fed to engineer that, but the path to getting there is quite narrow. And, you know, they kind of have to be like Top Gun Maverick and fly through a very narrow channel. It's not impossible. But like, you know, it is a very narrow path. The labor market is still very tight and wage growth is still higher than what the Federal Reserve would like it to be. But, you know, let's see.
Well, then the other point then of that sort of that look at the year ahead at the beginning of the year was falling earnings. We're going to talk a little bit in a moment about a couple of companies, two of the Magnificent Seven. But how has that sort of worked out? Because we're just getting into earnings season now. Has that sort of, have we seen that decline in earnings that we anticipated?
We have seen the decline in earnings. So that has happened, but the market hasn't really been very worried about that. Because it seems to be taking the backdrop that growth is more resilient and the markets are always forward looking and it's thinking that we're going to get through this okay. It remains to be seen still.
Okay. All right. Well, just to summarize then the key points there. So at the start of the year, you know, we were talking about a US recession, and we're still talking about a US recession. I think there's about a 64% probability of that happening. Yes, we're not ruling out the Fed engineering a soft landing, but as Monique said, it's a very narrow path that the Fed is going to have to navigate to achieve that. And obviously, we're seeing at the moment this very resilient property market, very resilient jobs market. But and the sort of 60-40 portfolio is kind of returning back to how it should be behaving. But as Monique says, 6 months is a tiny time frame when you're looking at what's happening in markets. And we really have to wait till we get to the end of the year before we can do a proper report card, or even longer, as you say. I mean, if you're investing, you're looking at sort of 5 to 10 years. So yeah. It's as you said, we were right, we were wrong, and that's inevitably always going to be the answer when you look at something in such a short time frame. Okay, well then that brings us then to the last point, US earnings. Now we are going to be covering this in a bit more detail with you and Howard Sparks in our next podcast, but you wanted to pull out a couple of the you know, the two very high profile names from the Magnificent Seven and some interesting kind of, well, what they reported and sort of market reaction to that as well.
Yeah, so in particular, I wanted to talk about Netflix and Tesla, but the backdrop to it is that the NASDAQ composite had a 2% down day on Thursday last week after both Netflix and Tesla reported earnings. Mm. And the technology AI surge this year means that that was the biggest one-day fall in the NASDAQ for almost 4 months.
Yeah.
So let's start with Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's interesting, because this is their first earnings report since they had this crackdown on sharing passwords, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, let's say top level, first of all, Netflix is not technically one of the Magnificent Seven. It's not technically an AI pick-and-shovel stock, although they do use generative AI to kind of enhance the recommendations that they personalize for you to keep you hooked on their content. But you're right, I mean, top level, I'm going to say their earnings report wasn't bad. They have been clamping down on password sharing. They introduced a cheaper subscription with ads.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's brought in 6 million new subscribers. So it beat Wall Street's expectations about subscriber cancellations. And Netflix is profitable, which is not something we can say about, you know, all of its streaming peers. Their income rose on last year. They're less exposed to the Hollywood writers and actors strike because they produce local content in lots of countries.
Yeah.
Apropos that Korean-made Squid Game,
yes,
for example.
Yes.
So all great news.
Yeah. So what's the problem?
Yeah, what's the problem? The problem, as it were, was that it missed on its sales estimates.
Right.
It guided lower for the third quarter, being conservative. Now, the market just didn't like that. The market wants incrementally better news every time. So the stock price fell 8.5%. Right. And I'm going to say it's kind of a similar story for Tesla. Tesla shipped a record of 500,000 cars and trucks in the second quarter.
Yeah.
It was up 80% on last year in terms of volume. How did they do it? They did it with price cuts. This is the classic strategy where you cut prices to maintain volume and market share in the face of slowing demand. Their profitability held up, but their profit margins came under pressure. And Elon Musk has hinted at more price cuts this year. So what did the stock price do? Stock price fell almost 10% on the day.
Yeah.
So the point I want to make here is around the momentum of expectation that has built up around some of the glamorous tech stocks.
Yeah.
You know, they are not bad companies. They are profitable companies, which is in contrast to what we saw in the dot-com era. But when you've had a lot of optimism that's built into a stock price, the near-term balance risks are going to be negative. It's going to be just more vulnerable.
Yeah.
There's kind of no way around that. And, you know, there's a number of technology stocks reporting earnings this week. I think Alphabet, which is the parent to Google and Microsoft, are going to be reporting today. So we're going to be watching that with interest. And I know, as you said, you know, you're going to get Howard onto the call.
So was there no benefit for Tesla from this sort of AI buzz that's been the flavor of the month?
Well, I would argue they have benefited. I mean, their stock price, in spite of that 10% fall, is up 100% this year.
Yeah. So it comes down to then, and we say this every time we talk about US earnings, it's less about what the companies report. It's more about the forward guidance that they give. Is that what's triggering these sort of falls in stock prices.
Yeah, and because, like I said, there's been so much optimism built into the stock price, and the market wants better news every time. Yeah. So if you've got a little bit of negative news because the stock price has gone up so much, your balance of risk is going to be the other way.
Okay.
Tactically, at least.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, that, so in summary, then, we've got a couple of those. So technically, Netflix is not one of the Magnificent Seven, but it's one of the big names that's driving a lot of stock market returns at the moment. And we had, you know, on the face of it, good earnings reports from Tesla and Netflix. But it was that perhaps that expectation, as you say, it was so strong that they perhaps didn't quite promise the future earnings that perhaps the market is craving, or that future sort of optimistic news. So that's where we are with that. And we will come back to this in much more detail. Say, so we've got Howard Sparks, we've got our US equity expert, and Monique and I will be having a chat with him to do a deep dive, not just into the Magnificent Seven, which is obviously the one that everybody's focusing on, but what's happening perhaps in some of the other sectors as well. Thank you very much, Monique, for joining me today. A reminder that the views expressed in this podcast are not intended to constitute investment advice, are accurate at the time of recording, and are subject to change. Don't forget to check out the podcast page on Coutts.com, and of course, you can subscribe to the podcast via all your favourite podcast platforms. As I say, Monique and I will be back for our next episode to chat with Howard Sparks about US earnings. Until then, bye for now.